Okay. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari, Gopi Jana Mallabha Girivaradhahuti Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari, Gopi Jana Mallabha Girivaradhahuti Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunatira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyabihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivedicacharya, also Tera Srimad. His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Ananda Gaudiya Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Se Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sridvaita Gadadhara Srivasati Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Govindanath Sri Mukunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Vrindavanam Kijai, Maturam Kijai, Jagannathaswami Kijai, Yamunamai Kijai, Srimati Lassi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Gaur. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namani. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaurvani Pacharni Nipashesha Shinyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarani. So Om Ganat Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshuram Miditam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, welcome again to the nightly or morningly, depending on where you are, Gita study. And we're going to start chapter 16, which is such an exciting chapter because it deals with the demoniac nature, also divine nature. But demoniac nature is much more interesting than divine nature. So, yeah, some spice in life. So, anyway, so we're at chapter 16. Let's go ahead and start the Bhagavad Gita. Hold on a second. We are going to share the screen. Okay, chapter 16, Divine and Demoniac Natures. Okay, so chapter summary is, those who possess demoniac qualities and live whimsically without following the regulations of scripture, attain lower births and further material bondage. For those who possess divine qualities and regulated lives, abiding by scriptural authority, gradually attain spiritual perfection. So in this particular chapter, you will be able to see what qualities you have that are divine and what qualities you have that are demonic. So let's start with text 1-3. And of course, first Christian can start with the divine qualities rather than demonic qualities. So these are also interesting. So let's start. Shri Bhagavana Vacha Avayam Satvasam Shuddhi Jnana Yoga Vyasati Dana Damasti Adyascha Svodhyayas Taparjava Mahimsa Sacham Akrodas Chaga Shanti Rupai Shunam Vaktaya Bhuteshvalo Lupvam Mardavam Hridiyaja Palam Tejakshama Shruti Shocham Droha Nati Manita Pavanti Sampadantai Vim Abhijata Shivarata. Shri Bhagavana Vacha, the Supreme Personality of God, had said, Avayam, fearlessness, Satvasam, Shuddhi, purification of one's existence, Jnana, and knowledge, Yoga, of linking up, Vyavasthitihi, the situation, Dhanam, charity, Dhamma, controlling the mind, Cha, and Ayagya, performance of sacrifice, Cha, and Swadhyaya, study of Vedic literature, Tapa, austerity, Arjavam, simplicity, Ahimsa, nonviolence, Satcham, truthfulness, Akrota, freedom from anger, Tyaga, renunciation, Shantihi, tranquility, Apaishunam, aversion to fault finding, Daya, mercy, Uteshu, towards all living entities, Alolupdvam, freedom from greed, Mardavam, gentleness, Sri, modesty, Achapalam, determination, Teja, vigor, Kshama, forgiveness, Triti, fortitude, Shocham, cleanliness, Adroha, freedom from envy, Na, not, Atima, Anita, expectation of honor, Bhavanti, are Sampadam, the qualities, Daivin, the transcendental nature, Abhijatasha, of one who is born of Bharata, of son of Bharata. Translation, the Supreme Personality of God had said, okay, get ready for the godly qualities. Fearlessness, purification of one's existence. And don't worry, we'll go over each one of these as we go through the purport, because Prabhupada is very specific about these. Cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, non-violence, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, vigor, forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy and from the passion for honor. These transcendental qualities, O son of Bharata, belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. So Prabhupada explains, in the beginning of the 15th chapter, that's the previous chapter, the banyan tree of this material world was explained. The extra roots coming out of it were compared to the activities of the living entities, some auspicious, some inauspicious. In the 9th chapter also, the devas, or godly, and the asuras, the ungodly or demons, were explained. Now, according to Vedic rites, activities in the mode of goodness are considered auspicious for progress on the path of liberation, and such activities are known as daivi prakriti, that means the energy of the Lord that's godly, transcendental by nature. Those who are situated in the transcendental nature make progress in the path of liberation. For those who are acting in the modes of passion and ignorance, on the other hand, there's no possibility of liberation. Either they will have to remain in this material world as human beings, or they will descend among the species of animals or even lower life forms. In the 16th chapter, the Lord explains that both the transcendental nature and its attendant qualities and the demoniac nature and its qualities. He also explains the advantages and disadvantages of these qualities. So, okay, let me just make it clear that you don't really have to try separately for each one of these qualities, because as stated, and as I've quoted many times before, yashasti bhagavacha kinchana sarvagunas tatra samasate sura. that if one actually is Krishna conscious, automatically these godly qualities manifest. However, you can gauge your advancement by how these godly qualities are not manifest or manifest. And also, if you see ungodly qualities or demoniac qualities manifest in your activities or in your consciousness, it gives you a challenge to work harder in Krishna consciousness. As Lord Chaitanya prays, what is it? I nanda tanuja king guram patita mam vishame bhavam buddho kripya tava para phan kaja stita duli sadra samba chintaya. O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other, and I'm going to paraphrase, I'm caught in this horrible material world exhibiting all these ungodly qualities. Please, my dear Lord, fix me up as one of the atoms or specks of dust at your lotus feet. So, remember, that's what happens. If we see demoniac qualities that we're really not proud of in our own hearts, in our own activities, in our own words, then immediately pray to Krishna, start chanting. So that's another reason why these godly and ungodly qualities are going to be described in this chapter. So Prabhupada explains the word abhijatasya in reference to one born of transcendental qualities or godly tendencies is very significant. To beget a child in a godly atmosphere is known in the Vedic scriptures as garbhodana sanskara. If the parents want a child in the godly qualities, they should follow the 10 principles recommended for the social life of the human being. In Bhagavad Gita, these are called these samskaras, reformatory practices. In Bhagavad Gita, we have studied also before that sex life for begetting a good child is Krishna consciousness, as Krishna himself. Sex life is not condemned, provided the process is used in Krishna consciousness. Those who are in Krishna consciousness at least should not beget children like cats and dogs, but should beget them so that they may become Krishna conscious after birth. That should be the advantage of children born of a father and mother absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And actually, Lord Vrishabhadeva says no one should become a father or a mother or a guru or a worshipable person unless they're capable of freeing their dependence from the cycle of birth and death. So just a little word here about this thing called Garbhodana Samskara. That is utilized, or this particular Samskara reformatory practice, which is what Samskara means. Samskara also means impression. It's important because the parents' mentality at the time of conception determines what type of soul is attracted. Just like we have that story in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Kashyapa and Diti, their consciousness, Kashyapa, and even though they were in a very high position, high planets, even though they were in that situation, their consciousness was not good. I mean, she was succumbing to lust, he was succumbing to lust, and as a result, they had two very nice boys known as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. When I say very nice, I'm being sarcastic, because they were demons. Anyway, so that's Garbhodana Samskara means to have the right consciousness. By the process of chanting Hare Krishna, one can have the right consciousness. I don't know any other way of having the right consciousness. Certainly not by watching a lot of Bollywood films. That will not give one the right consciousness. But by chanting the Lord's holy names. Anyway, it clears the mind. As we were mentioning last night, one of the ways you can tell whether you're chanting nicely or not is to how clear your consciousness becomes. Sometimes we say clear as a bell or clear as a window that's just been cleaned. That's how you actually feel when you've chanted nicely. The social institution known as Varnashram Dharma. The institution dividing society into four divisions of social life and four occupational divisions of caste is not meant to divide human society according to birth. It's not a caste system. It's just saying that whatever you do well is what you should do. That's actually Varnashram. In a nutshell, you know, whatever you do well is what you should do, and whatever status of life that you feel comfortable with, that's where you should be. You feel comfortable being an eternal student, be an eternal student. Some people are like that at the university. Or if you feel comfortable in household life, you know, raising children, do it. If you feel comfortable retiring, not playing golf, but retiring and serving Krishna, do it. If you feel comfortable being in sannyasi and traveling all over the place, do it. I was just thinking, because I'm in the sannyasi order of life, that a sannyasi is supposed to travel except for during the 4 months of the rainy season. That's called the Chaturmasya period. Because during the rainy season, it's hard to travel. But during this year, instead of the rainy season, the Chaturmasya period, we have the Corona Masha, Mashas, which is just like keeping me from traveling. It's just like, oh my God, I can't travel. I was speaking to one disciple in Germany today. And I said, I'm coming there as soon as possible. As soon as there is a vaccine, I'm taking it and heading for the hills, whether you like it or not. So anyway, so whatever situation you feel comfortable in, serve Krishna from that situation. Stani stata shutikatam tan vanmanopya, as the Bhagavatam states, to stay where you are. You don't have to change. Changing is not going to make you more Krishna conscious. It's going to make you more bewildered. That's all. That's varnashram. And just do what you feel comfortable doing. If you're an artist, be happy. Draw pictures of Krishna. What's the problem? And if you're a businessman, make money for Krishna. And if you like cow protection, take care of cows for Krishna. And if you like to be a politician, run for office, but preach Krishna consciousness purely, like Prabhupada had the devotees do when he was present on the planet. And if you like to study, study for Krishna and preach, not just study. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dana pratigraha. Preach and depend upon charity for maintaining yourself. No salary. So anyway, such divisions are in terms of educational qualifications. They are to keep society in a state of peace and prosperity. Because if everybody does what they like doing, what they feel comfortable doing, and people will be happy, materially and spiritually, if they also get Krishna consciousness at the same time, you know. It fulfills all needs, spiritual and material needs. The qualities mentioned herein are explained as transcendental qualities meant for making a person progress in spiritual understanding so that he can get liberated from the material world. That's the whole purpose, to get the out of here. In the Varnashram institution, the sannyasi, or the person in the renounced order of life, is considered to be the head or the spiritual master of all the social statuses and orders. A Brahmin is considered to be the spiritual master of the three other sections of society, namely the Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. But a sannyasi who is at the top of the institution is considered to be the spiritual master of the Brahmanas also. For a sannyasi, the first qualification, now here, Krishna or Prabhupada is talking about the first word in the verse, Avaya Shatla Sham Shuddhi. Because for a sannyasi, the first qualification should be fearlessness. Because a sannyasi has to be alone without any support or guarantee of support. He has simply to depend on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's how Prabhupada spread the movement. He left India with practically nothing. And he was dependent on Krishna. He was a real sannyasi. If one thinks, after I leave my connections, who will protect me? I'm not ready for sannyas. He should not accept the renounced order of life. One must be fully convinced that Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his localized aspect as Paramatma, is always within. That he has seen everything. And he always knows what one intends to do. One must have firm conviction that Krishna, as Paramatma, will take care of his soul surrendered to him. I shall never be alone, won't you think? Even if I live in the darkest region of a forest, I shall be accompanied by Krishna, and he will give me all protection. That conviction is called abhayam, fearlessness. That state of mind is necessary for a person in the renounced order of life. Of course, traditionally, the sannyasis would go to the forest, and there were tigers, don't think there were lions, but at least there were tigers, there were snakes, and it was dangerous. Now, of course, as Prabhupada said, it is more dangerous to go to a modern city to preach, because you never know what, you know, at least the tigers and whatever, they didn't have guns in their hands. This is a very dangerous world. Padam padam yabhi padam natesham. There's danger at every step. But it's necessary to be dependent on Krishna. And sometimes Krishna will put you in a situation where it seems he's not protecting you, but that's to help you surrender. Like what happened to Prabhupada one time? Prabhupada was gored by a bull. He was trying to preach, and a bull gored him, and he was left lying on the street, and he had to drag himself back to his home somehow or other. So one may think, wasn't Krishna protecting him? Krishna's protection means that he puts a devotee in certain situations for his own purposes, and only Krishna knows that purpose. But he protects us from illusion. Just because Krishna's protecting us doesn't mean we're not going to get in car accidents, doesn't mean we're not going to get sick, doesn't mean we're not going to die, doesn't mean the people are not going to attack us. It doesn't mean any of those things. It means that whatever happens is being allowed by Krishna for the benefit of a devotee and devotee service and for the glorification of the devotee. Like Prabhupada was one time asked, why is there so much opposition and difficulty? And so Prabhupada answered, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? So he does it to glorify the devotee. I mean, for example, if you had a movie and let's say the demon in the movie, it's like Star Wars, for example. I think everyone's seen Star Wars. Let's say you have Darth Vader. Like if the first time he meets the light side of the Force, he surrenders and says, oh yeah, you were right. Let me join with you. It was a boring movie. So there has to be some opposition to glorify the devotee, to glorify the hero. A devotee is a real hero. Then, probably the next word is, Abhaya Shatva Samshuti. Then he has to purify his existence. There are so many rules and regulations to be followed to renounce order of life. Most important of all, sannyasi is strictly forbidden to have any intimate relationship with a woman. He is even forbidden to talk with a woman in a secluded place. So it's very important that if someone, sannyasi or even a grahastha or anyone, should not be speaking with another lady who's not married to in a secluded place. You should have a rule of two or three or 10 or 100. Not in a secluded place. Because in a secluded place, what did Prabhupada say? Men are like water and women sometimes they're like fire. So if you put butter and fire together, you get melted butter. And if the butter melts completely, then you got ghee. And that's why one of the orders of life is called the Gihastha order of life. I know I mispronounced it wrong. That was a joke. Lord Chaitanya was an ideal sannyasi. When he was at Puri, his feminine devotees could not even come near to offer their respects. Of course, Prabhupada set a different example. We have a different example in ISKCON. They were advised to bow down from a distant place. This is not a sign of hatred for women as a class, but it is a stricter imposition of the sannyasi not to have close connections with women. One has to follow the rules and regulations of a particular status of life in order to purify his existence. For a sannyasi, intimate relationships with women and possession of wealth for sense gratification are strictly forbidden. And of course, for preaching, we have to engage wealth and all sorts of people. You know, what else alternative do we have? The ideal sannyasi was Lord Chaitanya himself, and we can learn from his life that he was very strict in regards to women. Although he is considered to be the most liberal incarnation of Godhead, accepting the most fallen conditioned souls, he strictly followed the rules and regulations of the sannyasa order in connection with association with women, with woman. One of his personal associates, namely Chota Haridas, was associated with Lord Chaitanya along with his other confidential personal associates. But somehow or other, This Chota Haridas looked lustily on a young woman, and Lord Chaitanya was so strict that he at once rejected him from the society of his personal associates. Lord Chaitanya said, for a sannyasi or anyone who is aspiring to get out of the clutches of material nature and trying to elevate himself to the spiritual nature and go back to home, back to Godhead, for him looking toward material possessions and women for sense gratification, not even enjoying them, but just looking toward them with such a propensity, is so condemned that he had better commit suicide before experiencing such illicit desires. So these are the processes for purification. And of course, that also applies for women looking at men. Now, if it's not a sannyasi, they can get married. You know, ladies can get married, men can get married. But the whole point is not to look at another person as an object for sense gratification. And the problem is that people do that. It's just like a little kid will look at a lollipop. I don't know if you know what a lollipop is, for those who don't know. I won't tell you. When I was young, we had these one type of lollipops called the Tootsie Roll Pop. I remember it very clearly. So a little kid will look at a lollipop and will look at the idea of enjoying it. So sometimes you have men looking at women like that, or women looking at men like that. There's a lollipop. And just like, the problem with that is that you don't even have stable marriages, because when the lollipop, anyway, there's nothing left but the stick. Oh my God, sorry to use such a horrible example. But there's, when you're taking a lollipop, and I remember lollipops very well. I haven't taken one in 50 years, but I remember them very well. So when the lollipop is all devoured, then you just have a stick. And what do? You get another lollipop. So if you're looking for someone, at someone, to enjoy them, it's exactly the same thing as a kid taking a lollipop. It's not like, that's not love in any order of life. Sorry about that. This next item is Jnana Yoga Vivastiti. Being engaged in the cultivation of knowledge, sannyasi life is meant for distributing knowledge to the householders and others who have forgotten their real life of spiritual advancement. A sannyasi is supposed to beg from door to door for his livelihood, but this does not mean that he is a beggar. Just like, I mean, you all see that I have a cape. That's what the cape is meant for. The cape is meant for begging. At least originally you were begging for, you know, vegetables, fruits, a slice of pizza or something like that. And nowadays, of course, the cape doesn't really come in handy for that particular activity. Now you just need a credit card reader. So humility is also one of the qualifications of a transcendentally situated person. Out of sheer humility, the sannyasi goes door to door, not exactly for the purpose of begging, but to see the householders and awaken them to Krishna consciousness. That is the duty of a sannyasi. So I remember when I was allowed to travel before this coronavirus demon, that we would go to different places and go door to door. Sometimes in New Orleans, not New Orleans. Sometimes we would go to New Zealand, we would go to Australia, Fiji, we'd go to people's houses and show up at the door, preach in terms of asking questions. They would ask questions, and it's very nice, and I really miss that. If he is actually advanced and so ordered by a spiritual master, he should preach Krishna consciousness with logic and understanding. And if one is not so advanced, he should not accept the renounced order of life. In other words, this has to be Jnana Yoga Vivastiti. That's part of the verse. Cultivation of knowledge. But even if one has accepted the renounced order of life without sufficient knowledge, he should engage himself fully in hearing from a bona fide spiritual master to cultivate knowledge. A sannyasi or one in the renounced order of life must be situated in fearlessness. Sattva abhaya, that's abhaya. And then chatva shamshuddhi, purity. In other words, he has to be like a white sheet. In other words, a white sheet, you can't have any spots on it. And Jnana Yoga, Vyavastati, means acquiring knowledge about self-realization. Okay. So those are the qualities. First, Krishna's talking about the qualities of a sannyasi. Next, he turns to the grahasthas. The next item is charity. Charity is meant for the householders. House members should earn a livelihood by an honorable means and spend 50% of their income to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Thus, a householder should give in charity to institutional societies that are engaged in that way. Of course, a householder can also engage in preaching, too. He can expand 50% or more of his time in reaching out to others and distributing books. That's the perfection of household life. Charity should be given to the right receiver. There are different kinds of charity, and that will be explained later. As will be explained later on, charity in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Charity in the mode of goodness is recommended in the scriptures. That means give to the proper person at time, place, and circumstance. But charity in the modes of passion and ignorance is not recommended because it is simply a waste of money. Charity should be given only to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. That is charity in the mode of goodness. Then as far as Dhamma, we're going over the different qualities. Self-control is concerned. It is not only meant for other orders of religious society, but is especially meant for the householder. Although he has a wife, a householder should not use his senses for sex life unnecessarily. There are restrictions for the householders, even in sex life, which should only be engaged in for the propagation of children. If he does not require children, he should not enjoy sex life with his wife. Modern society enjoys sex life with contraceptive methods or more abominable methods. Prabhupada here is talking about abortion, to avoid the responsibility of children. This is not in the transcendental quality, but is demoniac. If anyone, even if he is a householder, wants to make progress in spiritual life, he must control his sex life and should not beget a child without the purpose of serving Krishna. If he is able to beget children who will be in Krishna consciousness, one can produce hundreds of children. But without this capacity, one should not indulge only for sense pleasure. I think I should make this clear. We understand many people in the household life may be struggling with this particular issue. It's not, Prabhupada's words are not meant to condemn someone, but just to give someone a vision of the highest standard. And even if someone is not able to come up to that highest standard at this particular time, Prabhupada does not condemn someone or exclude someone from Krishna consciousness, or doesn't want people to feel guilty, but at least be aware, you know, where you're going, that's all. Sacrifice is another item to be performed by the householders because sacrifices require a large amount of money. Those in other orders of life, namely brahmacharya, vanaprastha, and sannyasi, have no money. They live by begging. So performance of different types of sacrifices meant for the householders. They should perform agnihotra sacrifices, as enjoined in the Vedic literature. But such sacrifices at the present moment are very expensive. It is not possible for any household to perform them. The best sacrifice recommended in this age is called Sankirtan Yajna. This Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of, guess what? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, is the best and most inexpensive sacrifice. Everyone can adopt it and derive benefit. So these three items, namely charity, sense control, and performance of sacrifice, are meant for the householder. So when we're talking about performance of sacrifice, the householder can directly do it or can give some charity donations so that others can do this preaching. You know, when one gives a donation to sannyasi, the sannyasi uses to preach Krishna consciousness. It's practical. I mean, just like, for example, people sometimes give me donations. So recently I purchased a vehicle for the devotees, not even for me, not for myself, actually. I don't think I've ever spent any of my donation money on a vehicle for myself. But I got a vehicle, so the devotees, it's like a small little bus, so the devotees go to the university and set it up like a kirtan vehicle to attract people to come to Krishna consciousness and for preaching. So even my own vehicle, which I have, and I'm almost embarrassed to say I have a Toyota Prius, not 2010. Not embarrassed, it's a nice vehicle. Even my own vehicle was paid for by my money. My mother, sorry. By my mother, not by my money. My good mother paid for it because I didn't want to spend Krishna's money on it. So, very nice. You know, and I'm happy. Everything should be engaged in preaching. Sannyasi should engage whatever people give him in preaching, not for his own enjoyment. to eat nicely or sleep nicely or something like that. That'd be crazy, just to eat. It's not, people give a donation and say, oh, now I can have pizza every night or something. No, basically, right now, I'm just taking something called buckwheat every night, which most people think, oh my God, how can he do it? So then Swadhyaya, Vedic study, is meant for brahmacharya student life. Brahmacharya should have no connection with women. They should live a life of celibacy, engage the mind in the study of Vedic literature. For the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, this is called Swadhyaya. And actually, everyone's meant to study. Brahmacharya, Grahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, whatever. Tapas or austerity, especially meant for the retired life. One should not remain a householder through his whole life. He must always remember that there are four divisions of life, brahmacharya, grahastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So after grahastha, household life, one should retire. If one lives for 100 years, he should spend 25 years in student life, 25 in household life, 25 in retired life, and 25 in renounced order of life. These are the regulations of the Vedic religious discipline. A man retired from household life must practice austerities of the body, mind, and tongue. And actually, Prabhupada said, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, the preferable renunciation from household life should be called Kshetra Sannyas, in which one can remain with one's wife, but engages in service to Krishna. That's all. Simple as that. It's not that in Kali Yuga, sannyas, the absolute sannyas of leaving wife and family and everything behind is not recommended. In fact, that's one of the things prohibited, except in cases, certain exceptional cases, as we've seen in ISKCON. Generally, it's not a good idea, but in certain exceptional cases, it works, like in Prabhupada's case, hopefully in my case, it works because one is able to freely travel and spread the Krishna conscious movement. Because Prabhupada said the business of sannyasi is to travel and preach. So now I have to travel and preach through Zoom. Not the same. I remember the good old days. Hopefully the good old days will come out again next year and I can see people face to face. So anyway, so that's the preferable type of renunciation. One remains with the wife and preaches and pushes forward the Krishna conscious movement. And especially husband and wife make a good preaching combination, because people appreciate that. Sannyasi, especially in the Western world, sannyasi is not as effective in preaching. Why is that? Because, basically, sannyasis have a nice home, comfortable situation, you invite people in, just like we have a very nice grahastha couple here, many nice grahastha couples, but one young grahastha couple we have here in North Carolina, Brajananda and his wife, and they're attracting so many people, and they're preaching full time. They're wonderful people. So that is tapasya. The entire Varnashram Dharma Society is meant for tapasya. That means accepting what is favorable for pleasing Krishna and rejecting what is unfavorable. It doesn't mean subjecting your body to all sorts of tortures like sleeping on a bed of nails and putting yourself in water in the middle of the winter, in ice water. It's actually interesting. We have a neighbor here has a swimming pool, which I use for my exercise every day. And I was just reading about what is the minimum temperature I could take. And they said, please don't go below like 60. Without the punch. And actually, have people in Russia, I think they're called the Polar Bear Club, who go swimming in ice. Actually, I did that one year. In Finland. So without tapasya, so that's not what tapasya. Tapasya means accepting what is favorable for pleasing Krishna and rejecting what's unfavorable. Without tapasya or austerity, no human being can get liberation. The theory that there is no need for austerity in life, that one can go on speculating, everything will be nice, is recommended neither in the Vedic literature nor in Bhagavad Gita. Such theories are manufactured by show bottle spiritualists who are trying to gather more followers. If there are restrictions, rules, and regulations, people will not become attracted. And Prabhupada did not adjust in the four regulative principles. I mean, practically all these other groups, do they have those regulative principles? Probably not. I mean, especially, and even the Prabhupada would oftentimes preach to Christians or criticize people who said they were Christians because they would not stop eating meat. That was Prabhupada's standard approach for people who said that they were Christians. He would pull out that one of the Ten Commandments that says, "Thou shalt not kill." Therefore, those who want followers in the name of religion just to have a show only don't restrict the lives of their students nor their own lives, but that method is not approved by the Vedas. So, I could have a lot more disciples if I didn't have the four regulative principles. I say, look, just chant Hare Krishna, smoke anything you want, have a relationship with anyone or anything that you want. Eat anything. And unfortunately, there is one person, not in our movement, no. There are people in India. There's one, oh my God, I'm not going to mention the name because people are going to hate me for it. But there's one group which Prabhupada criticized. They're known as the Murgi Mandir. For those who don't know what the word Murgi means, it means chicken. So they eat chickens. And, a famous so-called yogi and his follower, not going to tell you who they are. You can guess. You can eat any damn thing. And, people want something cheap. They love something cheap. And we don't need people who want something cheap. We want people who want the valuable gem of Krishna consciousness. As far as brahminical quality of simplicity is concerned, not only should a particular order of life follow this principle, but every member be in the brahmacharya ashram, grahastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, sannyasa ashram. One should be very simple and straightforward. Simple means not accepting any more than you need. I was just talking to someone today, and he was telling me about one of his friends his friend is retired, just him, the friend and the wife. And they just bought a 5,000 square foot house. What are you going to do with a 5,000 square foot house? For those of you who don't know what 5,000 square foot house is, pretty big. Probably 8 bedrooms or something like that. Ahimsa means not arresting the progressive life of any living entity. So here's another word that's being defined. One should not think that since the spirit spark is never killed even after the killing of the body, there's no harm in killing animals for sense gratification. People are now addicted to eating animals in spite of having an ample supply of grains, fruit, and milk. There is no necessity for animal killing. This injunction is for everyone. When there is no alternative, one may kill an animal, but it should be offered in sacrifice. In other words, rather than dying, yes, if there's no alternative, eat some lower creature, like a raccoon or a deer or whatever. I know, deer's cute. I know that. But, what can you do? So is a cow. Don't eat a cow under any circumstance. At any rate, actually, one time a devotee asked me, he said, what are you going to do when World War III comes and the bombs come? What are you going to do? What are you going to eat? And at that time, I was in Miami Beach. And I said, well, I'll just take fish then. And this devotee said, oh, you're a malacha. You're going to eat fish. I said, to survive and preach, yes. If there's nothing else to eat. Even though normally I'm abhorred by the situation. But in certain circumstances, survival is the first rule. And human beings have a higher position in society. They're allowed to do that, if necessary, but never a cow. At any rate, when there is ample food supply for humanity, persons who are desirous to make advancement in spiritualization should not commit violence to animals. Real ahimsa means not checking anyone's progressive life. So here Prabhupada is giving a further definition. So if you actually discourage someone from spiritual life, drive them away from spiritual life, or not even offer them the opportunity for spiritual life, that's a type of violence right there. you know better how to help someone and you just ignore their suffering condition, that's violence. That's violence by omission, not by commission. There's a difference. You can commit a crime by omission, not necessarily by commission. Commission is considered worse. The animals are also making progress in their evolutionary life by transmigrating from one category of animal life to another. If a particular animal is killed, then his progress is checked. So let him live out his full life. None of this ahimsa or mercy, this mercy killing. Don't think it's mercy killing to kill an animal if he's suffering. That animal is meant to work that out until he leaves or he should leave the body. If an animal is staying in a particular body for so many days or so many years and is untimely killed, then he has to come back again in that form of life to complete the remaining days in order to be promoted to another species of life. So their progress should not be checked simply to satisfy one's palate, that means one's taste, the tongue. This is called ahimsa. Let's see, do we have time for another one? Yeah, we'll just take sachem and then we'll take questions after that. Sachem, this word means that one should not distort the truth for some personal interest. In Vedic literature, there are some difficult passages, but the meaning or the purpose should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master. That is the process for understanding the Vedas. Shruti means that one should hear from authority. One should not construe some interpretation for his personal interest. There are so many commentaries in Bhagavad Gita that misinterpret the original text. The real import of the word should be presented, and that should be learned from a bona fide spiritual master. So here Prabhupada is taken in this particular context. It refers to actually presenting the scriptures as they are. It also refers to telling the truth. Elsewhere in the Gita, Krishna says, the austerities of speech are satya prihitam, speaking truthfully, pleasingly, and beneficially, satya prihitam, and of course, regularly reciting the Vedic literatures. So we should always tell the truth. Of course, sometimes we don't have to blurt out with something that's the truth. We don't tell a lie, but if something's going to hurt someone, I often give the example, if someone is, let's say we have someone who is material body is ugly, and you don't say to the person without anyone asking, you are ugly, even though it may be the truth, at least from your perspective. Of course, the soul never is ugly. So you can always say to everybody, you are beautiful or you are handsome, because the soul is always beautiful and handsome. But, you know, just don't cause pain to other people. Let satya priya be pleasing in your presentation of the truth, but you should always tell the truth. Because if you tell a lie, one time you're caught in a lie, people don't trust you anymore. Of course, that's one of the reasons I get bewildered by one famous person in the world who shall remain nameless, because I'm not supposed to talk about him, who lies. How can you tell when he's lying? He opens his mouth. So much. And then some people just accept the lie. Of course, the statement is if you actually tell a lie, this is how stupid some people are. You just tell a lie, you keep repeating the lie enough times, people will believe you. Just like that story the Prabhupada tells about, I believe it was Gopal Bhan, they wanted to convince this particular poor guy that he was a ghost. And there was sort of a conspiracy. They all decided they were going to say, you become a ghost, you become a ghost, you become a ghost, you become a ghost. And after about the fourth or fifth time, the guy believed that he was a ghost and he had died. You can imagine how freaky that would be if everybody you came across told you, you died and you become a ghost. You begin to believe it, maybe, after some time. Okay, so on that happy note, we will take some questions. We're still on the first few verses and first purport of this particular chapter. So let's go to our question and answer booth. Let me unmute everybody and then we will give you all an opportunity. You are all unmuted. Okay. Hey, Radhika Priya, it's good to see you. We miss you. So who wants to ask a question? It's nice. I like this Zoom because I get to see people I haven't seen that I want to see, and I'm not allowed to go travel because of this coronavirus thing. Anyway, so who has a question? Anyone? Okay, let me turn up my volume so I can hear you better to hear you with. Okay, ask a question. Who is that? Oh, yeah, Sita. Hare Krishna. Let either you're speaking very low or my volume is very low. Can you speak? Can you speak louder? I can hear you. It's kind of low, but it's all right. That's all right.
It's regarding donation, Gurudev.
Yeah. Okay.
When we are donating for to a farm for cows protection, then later you find that they use machines to milk the cow. Is that appropriate? I mean.
Well, are they going to protect the cows for the rest of the cows' lives?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, still the cows are being protected. As long as the Krishna, is it a Krishna conscious farm or?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah, sounds like New Govardhan.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all right. I mean, that's personally, I prefer that machines are not used for the cows, but still they're protecting the cows and it's cow protection. Yes, that's bona fide. That's
Okay.
good.
Thank you.
I mean, sorry.
I had one more question, Gurudev.
Okay.
For distribution of chanting mala, can we give the Tulsi mala to those who are eating meat?
I would prefer when we're getting people to chant and they're still eating meat, that we give them just regular wood beads.
Okay.
Not Tulsi Mala.
Not Tulsi mala.
Yeah, not Tulsi Mala. Generally, probably recommended that when you give people beads of any type to chant on, that you have them give at least some donation. Because if Prabhupada said that if you, they don't give something in return, you're sort of getting their karma. Just like when a spiritual master gives the beads at the time of initiation, one gets karma. The spiritual master gets. Oh my God, don't mind me. So, oh my God, maybe I need to retire. Take sannyas. Anyway, so Prabhupada said that generally there should be a donation given, a little something, even just a token given. I mean, sometimes we do programs and we hand out wooden beads to people just so that they would chant. That sometimes we got to take a chance just in the name of preaching. But generally, there should be some reciprocation when someone gets some beads.
The Tulsi beads, you mean, or for
Any
any bead?
sort of beads. I would say generally they should give at least a token contribution for the beads.
Thank
I
you,
mean,
Gurudev.
generally. I mean, when we do these programs, the university programs, sometimes we hand out beads so everyone can chant wooden beads, and then we take them back. That's an exception to get everybody to chant. I mean, sometimes you got to take a risk. But in general, if you're giving beads to someone, at least they should be giving something in return, or else there's some exchange of karma. Prabhupada actually said that there's some exchange of karma at that point.
Thank you, Gurudev.
Okay. So, who else has a question? Gopal Cohen, you can unmute yourself.
Yes, Gurudev. So in the purport, when Srila Prabhupada talks about charity, he says that the householders should earn a livelihood by an honorable means
Yes.
and spend 50%. So, what does that mean by honorable means? It seems to me that especially in the West, earning money almost necessarily in this day and age means not so honorable.
Honorable at least means honest and not directly taking part in sinful activities. Now, I understand that everything you do has some indirect connection with sinful activities in this world. I mean, even if I, as a sannyasi, go shopping and I pay someone money, that money, the profit from that is going to be used for, you know, God knows what. Or let's say if a householder decides to drive a taxi. And obviously, sometimes when you're driving a taxi, you've got to transport people who've just been shopping at the supermarket, right?
And use petrol and so many things.
You got to transport meat. Or we have one devotee here who works for Fiji Electric, FEA. And he's supplying electric so that animals can be killed and eaten and kept in people's refrigerators. So he's responsible for all the supermarkets that are refrigerating meat. You know, he has to take the karma for it. No, he doesn't take the karma for it. But I would say that there's, as long as you're not doing something directly, obviously a devotee should not work in a slaughterhouse. There's connect. Even if one works in the hospital, you're giving sometimes people medicine that has eggs in it, or have to even feed someone with eggs. You know, some of the vaccines actually have animal parts or even fetal parts in them. So, in this age of Kali, and then, you know, Prabhupada actually also said, understanding that when people take sugar, sometimes the sugar has like cow bones in it to purify it or to make it whiter. Not always, but sometimes they do. And Prabhupada said, what can you do? Everything in Kali Yuga is impure. So one has to just try to minimize these things. But if you're mixing with society somehow or other, you're part of that whole system. And the only way not to mix with society is if I went up to the Himalayas and just like ate snow or something like that for the rest of my human form of life. It's just like, what can you do? You just minimize it and be yourself an example, but In the modern society, we're not in a rural society where everybody's at a farm and plowing with the oxen and everything like that. Unless you really want to do that, Gopal, I don't think you could handle oxen too well. So even I couldn't handle an oxen at this point too well. So unless you want to do that, then you're stuck with the best of the bad bargain and you just preach with whatever energy you have. Bring people to Krishna consciousness. And I think when Prabhupada talks about 50%, he means 50% of one's energy too should be engaged in preaching or in serving the mission. It's not a necessarily a financial type of calculation. Hmm. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, the poor household, the kids are starving like little birds in a nest. Mommy, where's the worm? Where's the worm? Sorry, I gave the worm to Krishna. It's not exactly like that. Taking care of one's family, sending them to a Krishna conscious school. I mean, that's also part of service to Krishna, but also having a good sadhana, taking care of your home deities, and also ultimately helping with the progress of the Krishna conscious movement in whatever way we can. All right?
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, just quick.
So in the beginning, you said, obviously, one shouldn't work in a slaughterhouse. So for you, and probably most of us, that would be obvious, but there's some line that you're talking about. How does one know where to draw the line for themselves, each as an individual?
Ask Guru Maharaj. Or advanced devotees. Guru Maharaj doesn't have to be there. Yeah, that's why we have advanced devotees. We ask them, you know, my dear advanced devotee, I'm working in the meat department of the supermarket. Do you think this is all right? I'm a butcher. Do you think this is all right? You know, I think we just, you know, if there's a question, you just ask. It's a material world. Every endeavor is covered with some form of fault, just like fire is covered by smoke. Krishna says this in the Gita. Therefore, one should not stop one's duty in this world. You can't neglect ordinary things. All right, so let's take a question from someone else who doesn't ordinarily ask questions. Anybody else have a question? Everyone's quiet tonight.
I have a question for you today.
Yeah, what's the question?
I have two. Okay, the first one, the other day, I think we were talking, and you had mentioned that perception is accurate. Like, if one has a perception, it's like 100% accurate. Or something.
No. I said perception is valid.
It's valid.
Yeah. As a perception, if you say to me, I perceive spaceships in the air, it's a valid perception, but it's not necessarily true.
Okay.
It's an honest, valid perception. You have smoked too much marijuana, and I've taken too much LSD today. I mixed it with your prashadam. So you're seeing spaceships in the air, the aliens coming down with little antennas, and you actually see it. That's a valid perception. What can I say? You perceive it. You saw it. That's right. But it doesn't mean it's true. So, I mean, I'm exaggerating here. Like if someone says to me, you're being mean to me. So that's valid. It's not, but it may not be true. It may not be my intention, but that's how they're perceiving it. So it's not for us to actually criticize someone else's perception, because we are not like the super soul in someone else's heart and someone else's mind. That's how they perceive it, and that's valid. Isn't it? Like someone said to me just a little bit before class today, oh, this is so horrible, this being here in the West. I can't go to India this year. I won't say who said that to me. And I invalidated his perception. I said, that's nonsense. But I should have just validated it, I should say, because he just disappeared. So I should say, that's a valid perception that you see like that. But instead, I just like, what? That's nonsense, you little creep! You rascal demon! Who brought you up in Krishna consciousness? And this is the thanks I get for all those years and years of trials. I didn't say it like that. But, the important thing is to validate someone's perception. Yes, all right, I validate it, and now I chastise you. No, you don't do that. I'm thinking, theoretically, you should validate someone's perception and then try to understand it. Don't negate it. It's really horrible to have someone sort of negate your perception. It's like really disempowering perception. Like if someone says to me, you're really mean, instead of my saying, you're wrong, I'm kind. If you don't think I'm kind, I'm going to smack you. No. Sorry about that, I'm just being a little facetious. If someone says you're mean, then I would say, I'm being empathic, I would say, so you see me as being mean. What did I say that really caused you to feel like that? Anyway, so that would be the proper way to deal with it, rather than just saying I'm not mean. So perceptions are valid, yes. Perceptions are not true necessarily, because we perceive a lot of things that are not true. That's called illusion. One of the tendencies of the conditioned soul, several of them, is one of them is to be an illusion, the other one is imperfect senses. So I can see things that are not there, or I can not see things that are there. So, you got another question?
Yes. I read somewhere, it was like in a, like a bone, I think it was with Champaka we were reading, that Tulsi, it was something involving Tulsi Maharani and how different jivas take on, they like, they want to be in like her body. So in the plant, in her plant form here, different jiva souls like are in different plants.
And they can empower, she can empower others like that, yes. It's something like Shaktavesh Avatar, like a particular jiva, like Prabhupada is empowered by the potency, Krishna's potency. So in other words, he's in particular, one sense, Prabhupada is an incarnation of Krishna. That sounds really heavy. But he's not God. But he's an avatar, he's a Shaktavesh Avatar. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Shaktavesh Avatar. Okay, just one other person can ask a question and then we have to go. Someone else, take advantage. Your last opportunity for the evening, well, for the morning. Oh, that Radha Padma's husband wants to ask a question. Mr. Radha Padma. Anyways, I know it's the leading content.
Hare Krishna Gurudev,
Dandavat Pranam. Haribol, so what's up? What's up, Doc?
Gurudev, just an extension of the question what Sadhvi Mataji was asking, I think, a few weeks ago. Regarding the photos and the thing. Like, we give out stickers to like kids who are on their skateboards at Queen Street in Auckland. And they put it on their skateboard. It is underneath the skateboard. And what should we do? And I mean, when I
stickers saw, stickers with Krishna's name, you mean?
Krishna, Jagannath
sticker. And they're stepping on the skateboard?
They put it underneath. But their feet on the top, but the underneath of the skateboard, they put the sticker.
Not a good idea.
Then
Not a good idea. Actually, I'll tell you a Prabhupada story. Once upon a time, the devotees thought that they would greet Prabhupada nicely, and they wrote the Hare Krishna mantra on the steps of a temple. And they thought Prabhupada's going to really like this. So he came and he was horrified to see it, and he actually walked on the grass and on the dirt just to go around the steps. And he never went on the steps until they washed away the Hare Krishna mantra. So wherever we put the Hare Krishna mantra, it should not be put where someone or Jagannath or any spiritual picture should not be put where someone's going to step on it.
Mm. They said, I asked, like, we can ask them to put it on the fridge or in their books. So, they said, in the fridge, they can keep meat or they can keep the books.
That's fine. Let them put them on the fridge. But not on the skateboard. Not where they're going to put their feet. That's really a no-no. We don't want to encourage people to commit offenses against Krishna's name.
Yeah.
Anywhere else, on their door, on the hotel, you know, just like, I mean, even devotees distribute Bhagavad Gitas to go in all the hotels. At least in America, we have this hotel Gita, motel Gita program. And obviously in the motel rooms, they're not exactly setting them up as temples every night. So many horrible things happen in the motel rooms or hotel rooms. But we still want the Gitas there. Krishna's there, but not on the feet. No, I think that's unacceptable. The word someone will put their feet on Krishna's name. I would cringe.
If this is the skateboard,
I know it's skateboard.
And they're putting here. So devotee said that is okay because they are not exactly putting, but.
But they're putting their feet over it. Yeah, I understand. It's the bottom of the skateboard. It's really not a good idea.
Okay.
It just encourages offenses, you know, put Krishna's name down like that. Anyway, that's my opinion. We should be careful about Krishna's name. Because Krishna's name, holy be thy name. Don't, you know, that's one of the Ten Commandments, isn't it?
Yes.
Holy be thy name. Okay, so
thank you.
We can end now. We'll see. And it's, of course, it's Sunday for all of those of you who are in New Zealand, Australia, and Fiji. So happy Lord's Day to all of you. And it's Saturday here, so to Gopal, happy Sabbath. It's Saturday. That's his religion. So anyway, so we'll see everybody tomorrow at the same time, same station. All glories to Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Ki Jai.